Oh, the Nets. Are you kidding? They suck.
Hello, Brooklyn. How you doing? Where you going? Can I come too? If I can, I will be your man. You can be my lady and have my baby and drive my car. You got me crazy. Don't you ever take off. I'm going to take it.
Hello, Nets fans. How ya doing? This is the Russell and Fro podcast. Russell here, Fro there. I am Brett the Man Bun Garofalo, staring longingly into the eyes of my co-host, Carl the Talon Jackson. And much like the Nets, we're bringing you some poorly constructed content today. Our plan is to distract you and ourselves, quite frankly, from the Nets' recent tailspin with my favorite Russell and Fro pastime of reacting in real time to Carl's ESPN trade machine machinations. But first, the moment, the hour, the minute we've been building towards. Carl, how are you?
Well, Brett, I'm watching the Nets, so it could be better. Nets Miami looking like this is in a Wayback Machine from 1998, sitting at, you know, possible that neither team's going to crack 90 by the end of this one. We'll see. I would also say a couple notes on your intro. Number one, I'm a Fansbook guy all the way now. ESPN trade machine, I think, is still built in Flash, so I have not used that for a while. Definitely Fansbook. I like to use the term roster baiting for this type of exercise, intellectual. So, you know, we're gonna roster bait. We're gonna roster bait all over you. We're gonna roster bait 20 times before we go back to see our doctor if we need to. So let's get after it. But I guess before we get into the trades themselves, because as we just talked about before we started this, like, there's only so many avenues. I guess, Brett, like, quickly, without laying down on the psychiatrist's couch here, like, taking a step back, how different do you feel like where the Nets are right now is from sort of what your expectations were in the beginning of the season? And have you seen anything from their play this year that causes you to drastically reconsider where you thought they were headed prior to this season starting? Because I think that that's a helpful frame to go into the trade deadline with.
I agree. And like we touched upon earlier, I do think it's the Bears are who we thought they were situation with the Nets. The Nets are who we thought they were. That being said, there are a couple nuances that we've seen this season that I do want to touch upon. And the first thing that I want to say is when you're anticipating a team to be a middling team, they're going to go through stretches like the Nets are going to go through right now. They looked great to start the season. They were above 500. Now they're going through a stretch where they look like absolute dog shit. And I'm surprised that they beat the Pistons in those two games. That second game was like game 7 of the NBA Finals. And guess what? It's going to swing back the other way at some point too. I do still believe that the Nets are right around a 500 team or a couple games under. This just happens to be one of those times where the Nets are borderline unwatchable because they're missing all their shots. And when they make their threes, they can beat any team in the NBA. Just unfortunately, they don't have the best shooters in the NBA like the 2015, 16, 17 Warriors. And that's what we would have to do to play like the Nets are currently playing to have a top record. The other thing that I'll point out is I think you and I both agreed that the biggest wild cards going into this season were a unexpected leap from somebody on the roster, whether it was Clax, whether it was McHale, whether it was Cam Johnson, you name it, or B, Ben Simmons playing 60% plus of the games. Neither of those things have happened. We predicted them to be around a 500 team without either of those things happening. And
do we need to check the math on Simmons? I'm not, you were a better math guy in high school than I was. Do we, the numerator and the denominator, is it, are we not close to 60%? Is it something, can you help me with that?
Is he at like 15%?
I think he's at 6 games, I believe, yes. Something like that. I don't know what so it is rough. As a percentage, but. But he's coming back, Brett. He just released an Instagram, nicely edited Instagram video.
I enjoyed the picture of him in front of the Eiffel Tower. That means he's going to be playing at least 2 more games.
He could have made it seem more like it was coming out of his crotch, but, you know, anyway.
I feel like that's more of a Patty Mills picture.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I don't think this would hurt as much if Ben Simmons didn't look pretty damn good when he played. I mean, listen, still unplayable at the end of games because he's going to get fouled every time and be put to the line. He still wasn't driving, getting to the line, but his passing was on point. His defense was great, especially his help and rotation defense. And those are things that are sorely needed by the Nets. If we could have another perimeter defender out there that can guard almost all five positions, super helpful. So I do think that he was a pretty decent positive with the Nets, even though he still wasn't anywhere near where he was prior to joining.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I'm not really losing. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of written him off.
Has
boiled down to Nekias Duncan was on the low post like very early in the season. I remember I was driving to pick up tacos, listening to it. And his comment was basically like the Nets roster is full of guys who can maintain an advantage once it's been created for them, but they don't have anybody that can create it. And
that's a great way to
I think that to me, like that's been really the whole thing. And I think that's why when Simmons was there, it was helpful because the transition game, like I feel like the way that the Nets have set up their defense, both to ensure rebounding, but also just like the shot diet that they allow, like is really trying to juice the margins on getting them transition possessions so that they can start as many of those possessions as possible with that advantage created inherently for them. I think that also speaks, in my view, to Cam Thomas and what he's brought to the table, but also what he's lacked, because this team is so starving for, and you can put Mikal Bridges in this category as well in terms of what he struggles with, but like this team is so starving for somebody to be able to create advantages for them so that they can kind of like get the defense on tilt and have guys playing as a secondary creator, and just nobody's been able to do that. And Cam Thomas can do that for himself, but can't do that for others. And that's not like a normative statement on his character or anything like that. It's just not in his skill set right now. So I think honestly, looking at this to be a glass half full guy, like I'm glad that the pendulum swung. Like I agree with what you say in terms of like middling teams. You know, you're not 500 all year. You're not win one, lose one. You're, win 8 of 10 and then, lose 8 of 10 kind of a thing. I'm glad the pendulum has swung the way that it has so that they're approaching this trade deadline with a nod toward maximizing the assets that they have. I think that will ultimately serve them well in the long run, which I think is a good transition, as good a transition as any to what they're looking for.
I agree. So I'll say this though, Carl, if you're not with Cam Thomas, you're with the terrorists. You might want to rethink that opinion.
Second time I've been called a terrorist today. The first I was wearing a ski mask in the house and I'm not going to go into the exact comment that was made, but anyway, I was just trying to learn how to ski, Brett. Anyway, so why don't we just hop into the trade machine, I guess.
I'm ready
to masturbating.
Take us for a ride, Carl.
Where do you want to start, Brett? Who pick a guy on the team that is one of the three guys that are in almost all of my trades?
That's fair. So do we want to start with players to target outside of the team first based on some of the rumors that have been swirling around the interwebs, or do we want to choose who we want to jettison to other teams for ideally some valuable assets?
Let's start with DeJounte Murray. I guess that's the sexiest name.
Yeah,
right,
that's
now,
what
right?
I was thinking. I mean, it's like the topic on the tip of everybody's tongue. So, should we do it? Should we not? What should we do it for?
So what? Would I be correct in assuming, based on our previous conversations, that you're kind of meh on the whole thing?
So I am meh on the whole thing. You're right. I'll give a very brief opening statement as to why I'm meh on the whole thing. I don't see where and how DeJounte Murray fits into a deep playoff run roster construction based on the players that are currently available. For example, Nets talk a lot about Donovan Mitchell. I'm not sure how those two guys necessarily fit together because he doesn't create spacing around Mitchell, which is really what you need. He's an okay, but not a great 3-point shooter. And if you're going to bring in a star, Mitchell, anybody else, you're going to want spacing. He does provide great defense. I think that's awesome. He does provide secondary creation. Also, I think that's awesome. But I feel like spacing's at such a premium if we're targeting another star.
Fair enough. I guess my thought is it depends a little bit like who that fifth like final piece is. But what I would say is just not knowing what that is, and my belief is that the Nets have ideas of who they want to be that guy, but I don't think they're fully in control of who that person is going to be. Right. And so I think part of the plan here is how do we set ourselves up for, you know, putting ourselves in a position to capitalize on that once that becomes available. And so I think the case that I would have for DeJounte Murray is like, number one, really like what matters here is building a bridge back to 2028, which is when the Nets control their picks, as I confirmed with you, Flynn, right before this.
It's confusing. There's a lot of pick swaps out there. A lot of trades have been made.
You know, so like good, bad, or other, like build from the middle, you know, whether it's a plan to you know, win an NBA finals, like in between then, I think is a little bit irrelevant. So I feel like collecting these guys that are sort of one notch below All-Star, one notch below Max, and you'd have, you know, potentially four at that point between Murray, Bridges, Cam Johnson, and Claxton on the roster. Like, I think that's a good way to go about building a roster. You could easily add a max guy on top of it, even if it doesn't put you in a position to, you know, to immediately like win with that roster. Like, I feel like those are all tradable pieces. Those are all guys that can get you an additional max guy if you need to. Like, it leaves the door open for a consolidation trade. And it, you know, if we are entering a period, which I think a lot of people have talked about, where there's like a bit of a paradigm shift in the way that league rosters are constructed, given the new CBA, and we're moving away from sort of like the big three model into like needing a deeper roster, then I think those are the types of contracts, those are the types of guys you want. I also think just sheerly by size of contract, there is going to be a market for that type of player at the deadline. So they're going to retain some value, even if they're not, you know, even if they're not sort of a core building block, because there just aren't guys at that salary range, and they're useful as trade fodder. So to me, it's like, you know, he does fit what the Nets are trying to do, maybe not seamlessly, but I don't think you, like, to me, I feel like if you can get him, depending on what the acquisition cost is in terms of assets, like if you can get him in the door relatively cheaply, like I think you kind of do want to jump on that, because it gives you just another one of these building blocks. And maybe he goes out in a trade for Donovan Mitchell, honestly, at that point. Like, but I think just from an asset play, it makes sense for that reason.
So I agree with you that Mikal Bridges' contract is incredibly tradable. I'm not sure what Clax is going to get paid after this season. And if we do trade for Murray, unless I'm reading this incorrectly, his contract also comes up this summer. And I'm very interested to see what type of contract he would want from the Nets.
Well, no, he has a contract already. His extension kicks in after this summer.
Oh, I see.
So
what was I looking at here?
So he's on the book. It's very similar to Cam Johnson's deal, right?
Oh,
so
he's got the extension. Okay,
it goes up to you know, 25 million, 27 million in 25, 26, 29, 5, and 26, 27, and 31 million in 27, 28. So it's not cheap. Like it's a, you know, it's a commitment, but it's below max. And I feel like these guys are all sort of on the same timeline age wise. So like, it makes sense to put them together and just sort of see what you have. And I mean, to me, I would just look at it as, you know, you're probably going to want three or four guys, and you're going to end up with sort of five, but like, I think you can, it lets you sort of pick and choose. And that way, like, and not naming names in terms of like who the right fit is, but like if that guy is Donovan Mitchell, okay, great. Like between Murray, Bridges, Johnson, Claxton, like you can make a determination on like, okay, how do we fit around Mitchell? If it's Karl Anthony Towns, like you can make that determination too. If it's, you know, somebody else at a different position, like you can make it work, and it gives you a little bit more flexibility while also like raising the floor a little bit.
I see that. So are you anticipating one of those folks being involved in the trade? And that's why you're looking at those contracts, or are you hoping that we would bring somebody in and those would be the, that would be the roster around that star?
I mean, I think in an ideal world, you bring somebody in, right? Because it also gives you just a defensive, like two-way player type infrastructure to build around them. But I think if you need them to be involved in a trade, you can. And then you've got, you know, it's not like you're trading Cam Johnson and you don't have anybody at that sort of salary slot left or that capability as a player. Like it hedges your bet. It diversifies things a little bit in a way that's productive, I think. So, but again, I think it's really dependent on how to make it work. So one of the ideas I had, and this is, we're just gonna get everybody involved from the beginning, I think.
Let's do it.
So I guess one other question that I have for you before I get in while I try to find which tab my notes are in. What do you think about the fit of Spencer Dinwiddie on the Los Angeles Lakers? Gabe Vincent just went down. He's an LA guy. We've seen him play off big wing creators before very well. What are your thoughts there?
I think they need another creator. And I think they need another creator that can truly get to the foul line. Because you could say that D'Angelo Russell is a creator, but he's not the type of guy that gets to the rim. He's not the type of guy that gets to the line. He is a great passer, as we know, a great skip passer. He's very creative when he's out there. Spencer Dinwiddie also plays defense. I'm not going to say he's a great defender, but he plays
defense. Well, I think he's a plus. I think he's a plus. Well, I don't know if he's a plus defender, but I think he allows
size
to create like solid defensive lineups by being able to be the nominal point guard at 6'6". And in terms of getting to the line, I've talked to Spencer and he thinks he should get to the line more.
Especially in the last minute and 30 seconds of an NBA.
Yeah, not like he should do anything different to do it, just like the call should happen for him.
Yeah, no, I think he was tweeting about that on his Bitcoin account.
Yeah. Are we going to pause for 10 seconds while we watch Mikal Bridges clank one of these free throws? Nope. Hit one.
We're not going to pause. So we're watching the end of Nets Heat right now. It's a very tense affair. Cam Thomas shot a three that didn't even hit the rim to take the lead. And then somehow Bam Adebayo missed a free throw and Mikal Bridges is at the line. I'm behind Carl in our feed. He just rattled in the second free throw.
All right, so let me get this deal in before we have these last 4 seconds
during the timeout.
So here would be my thought. So I guess two deals with the Lakers. One does not involve DeJounte Murray, but we're just going to get it off the board first. Dinwiddie and Royce for D'Angelo Russell and Gabe Vincent does work in the like salary wise. I think that would be an upgrade especially if Vincent's hurt. I think that's definitely an upgrade for the Lakers. Royce is definitely a player type they could use. He's been shooting it super well. And so, you know, I think you'd need one of those Lakers first round picks would probably get it done. I don't know that the Lakers would do that or feel the opportunity cost is too high. And I think the guy that they would rather get is Finney Smith over Royce. And so that's where the DeJounte Murray Hawks deal came in, so here's a three-way, Brett, for you to roster bait to. Number one, Lakers end up with Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney Smith, and Wes Matthews. The Hawks get Gabe Vincent, Jalen Hood-Scafino, a 2025 first round pick from Brooklyn, and 2 second round picks from LA. So my thinking there is they want two first for Murray. I should probably complete it. And Brooklyn would get D'Angelo Russell and DeJounte Murray. So they want two firsts for Murray. This gets them a first from Brooklyn. It gets them Hood-Scafino, who was a first round pick, plus 2 seconds. I think that's probably close enough for rock and roll. But I could be wrong. And so I don't know what your thoughts are on that one. The real-time watch is great.
It is. Before I give you my thoughts,
Team got to 90 by the end of regulation.
That is wild. This is like a Pistons Pacers game from 2005.
Yeah, I don't know which Davis brother is in, but probably all of them.
It's probably like Rolando Davis or something. Sounds like somebody the Nets would have on their roster. I would just like to review what the Hawks gave up for DeJounte Murray, and then we can talk about what they might be willing to downgrade to, given that they're likely looking to salary dump and take a draft pick. So they paid a 2003 first round pick via Charlotte, a 2005 first round pick that's from Atlanta, unprotected, a 2007 first round pick, again, Atlanta, unprotected, and a 2026 pick swap. So that's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot. And in the trade that you're proposing, they would get Gabe Vincent, serviceable role player. I really like him. Proven player in the playoffs. Jalen Hutchcafino, you know, maybe there's some upside there. Has looked like crap so far. But again, you know, even Scoot Henderson hasn't looked that great. I think he's going to be awesome. They get the first round pick from Brooklyn. So they do get one first round pick, and they get those two second round picks. Yep. So if you want
to. Not great, Bob.
I mean, it's not. I guess you could equate JHS to a first-round pick. So you could theoretically try to sell this as, hey, you're getting two first-round picks, and you're getting two second-round picks from the Lakers, who, if Bronny James gets drafted this year and it's not by the Lakers, is he really going to be there over the next couple of seasons? Probably not. And if he leaves, how far can Anthony Davis, who's injured at least 30% of the time, take the team? There could be some pretty valuable second-round picks.
Do you think that, I mean, I guess the other thing is, like, do the Lakers just throw in a first with Hutchcafino and Vincent for Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Wes Matthews? Maybe.
I mean, I do think Dorian Finney-Smith is a big piece for them. I think Sam Vecenie, or maybe it was Brian Windhorst, but somebody said it best, where the Lakers have a lot of role players that do one thing well, but not two things well, and they have to continue to make sacrifices no matter who's on the floor. So if one guy's shooting, he's not playing defense, or if one guy's playing defense, he's not shooting. They just don't have that do-it-all role player, and that would be Dorian Finney-Smith, and you could argue Spencer Dinwiddie as well. They don't necessarily take anything off the table anywhere, and you're not going to be relying on Spence as your primary creator, which the Nets typically do when he's on the floor. If he's your secondary guy, or sometimes even tertiary guy when he's out there, that's a super valuable piece. I don't know if the Lakers will see it that way, but personally, if you're not getting Kyrie Irving, or you're not getting one of those top tier guys that you were hoping for, I think this is a nice way to shore up their roster and give them a chance at making a deep run in the playoffs. Now, I'm very biased here, but I don't think it's a bad haul for them. I think it's more would the Hawks do this, personally, as I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends how motivated they are to move him. And I'm really interested in what the Murray to Brooklyn sort of smoke has been. I saw Windhorst sort of being like, don't rule him out. But that also seems to be what it seems to be, that Murray's representatives, for one reason or another, want Brooklyn to be in the running there. And I don't know what purpose that's serving exactly, if that's to juice the market, if that's actually where he'd want to go, or what, but it's interesting.
Well, so, per Kevin O'Connor, he says that the Hawks are looking for two first round picks for Giannte Murray. So is that construction that you put together the equivalent of two first round picks? You know, maybe you can consider Jalen Hutchcafino and the two second round picks from the Lakers the equivalent value of a second pick.
Yeah. And I think there is room where, like, maybe you can convince the Lakers to toss that second one in. And then that's probably could give a better one than the 25 pick too. Like, maybe you give that 28 Philly pick.
I really would want to, though, but who knows?
But maybe not. I don't know. Or the 27 Phoenix pick potentially too, like could be one that you throw out there. Like to me, I think if you're giving up, I guess my framework for this is, like, if you're giving up picks before 2028, or just a pick before 2028 to get to DeJounte Murray, like, I think that's worthwhile. Even if you are then passing through picks that you would have gotten for Dorian Finney-Smith. To me, like, that
I agree with
that's
you.
more interesting in a lot of ways than just getting, you know, two sort of late round, first round picks from a contender for Finney Smith, like over the next 2 years. Like, and I know Sean Marks does well in the draft, and like, I don't want to take that sort of ammo away from them, but like, to me, like that plan that I talked about before is worth kind of moving forward with this. And this is kind of a creative way to do it.
I do really think that could work. It just depends on how on tilt the Hawks are about how much they paid for Dejounte Murray and how much they value that 25 first round pick from Brooklyn. Like, for example, if you could convince the Lakers to throw a first round pick in, that would be a much more valuable pick in their mind. So maybe, maybe
well,
that's
although,
a thing.
I mean, I don't know if it's the Nets' own pick, like the Nets suck. So, and Houston
true.
Has their swap rights, who's not great either. So
it's, you know, going to be like a lottery pick.
It's not like they're swapping with, well, I mean, it, you know, it's not necessarily like they're swapping with, you know, Boston or something like that. So anyway, all right. So let me throw one other interesting DFS trade at you.
Okay.
And this one involves no picks. Do you think that the Nets Ooh. Would do Dorian Finney-Smith to the Clippers for Terrence Mann and Bones Highland straight up?
I mean, you're taking a buy low on Bones Highland.
Yeah.
That's already happened with the Clippers.
Who's filling a need essentially for you as like a you know, scoring guard type. Like, I don't necessarily know that he would get a ton of run with the Nets, but like, I think he'd be worth bringing into training camp and seeing, like, he'd be worth an end of the bench stash.
Yeah. I think he's like Cam Thomas 2.0, throw them both out there, have them fist fight and see who can be the best empty stat scorer.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they're different, you know, players, but yes, but essentially you're correct.
Yeah. Just like all offensive players that don't
yeah.
pass well. And not yeah. that they don't want to pass. Like you said, they just don't pass well. Yeah. I mean, I love Terrence Mann, and I do think that his style of play fits what the Nets are trying to do very well. And he's much younger. Well, maybe not much younger, but he's younger than DFS.
He's much younger than DFS, right?
Is like, because I feel like he was one of those like older players that was drafted.
Let's see. Yeah, but that means like
he's 27.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
How old's Dorian Finney-Smith though?
I think he's
like 32 or something, right?
Is he really that old? No, I thought he was
maybe
like
he's 29.
He's 30. Okay. He'll be 31 in May. So he's like 31.
All right.
Not too much of an age difference, but that fits the Mikhail Cam Johnson timeline a lot better than DFS does. I would take Terrence Mann, and I would do that for sure to get Mann.
Okay. I don't know that the Clippers would. But they might. But that would be more interesting to me than like PJ Tucker and like a Clippers first round pick.
You know what? I haven't been monitoring Terrence Mann's minutes since the James Harden trade. I'd be interested to see what that looks like. Do a little basketball right, reference well, check here. How did you come up with that one? That's an interesting one.
So, I mean, that one I came up with just like listening to the Low Post with Ohm on. I'm going to skip the last name because I'll butcher it. But when they were talking about just Clippers deals and the fact that they need like one other player like that. And Zach Lowe's like, I would guess that they've definitely had conversations with the Nets about either O'Neal or Finney Smith. So that was sort of my impetus for it. My thought process, there's not a ton to like make it work salary wise there if you don't do something like that. And that's already a 2-for-1. So the Nets would have to cut somebody as well, which I don't know that they'd be super wild about, unless they were, you know, doing a 2-for-1 outgoing somewhere else. For Royce, you could get like slightly better salary. Like you could do like Mason Plumlee and Amir Coffee for Royce, which is like, you know, and then obviously it would need picks on top of that. That's sort of interesting, I guess.
Yeah, I like snagging Coffee as another upside play.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing with Finney Smith too is, sorry, just tying up, is like, as a player, he's what both these teams are looking for. And as like an asset in terms of his contract, like is pretty incredible as well. So he's like a perfect,
that's fair,
scalable yeah. player type and salary to toss on a team that's relatively maxed out. like both of these guys are.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way that you can make a trade with the Bucks work for somebody like Dorian Finney-Smith? Because I feel like that position is something that they desperately need more defense and shooting at, and it's great Middleton insurance for them as well. I mean, he's definitely not going to be the player that Middleton is, but to have somebody that can shoot and guard at that position where Middleton's not really doing either right now, I think it would be massive.
I mean, do you think the Nets would want to, even if they could?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know who on their roster is worth trading for, and that's why I don't think the Nets would want to, unless they're getting some of those future Bucks picks, in which case I think the Nets definitely would want to.
I mean, do you think the Nets would do it for, because I think Connaughton doesn't work.
No.
And
like, you're not doing it for Connaughton, right? You're doing it for Connaughton plus picks.
Right. Sorry, but I'm just.
No, don't be sorry. I was just adding color. Yeah, who would?
Yeah, because Bobby Portis is also too short. Like the salary is like not quite there. So it's going to be a 2-for-1. It's tough, I think.
Yeah, their roster is very top loaded.
Yeah, really. You'd be doing a 2-for-1 deal like in the middle of the season. I don't know.
But they're really hurting there, and maybe there's a 3-team deal that you can make work. But if you're looking at that middle spot for them, I mean, Jay Crowder not playing.
Yeah.
Andre Jackson. No, can't shoot. He's great.
I would take him back. But
yeah. I would love to get him, but I don't know if they would trade him.
No, I mean, I think it makes all the sense in the world for Milwaukee. Just getting the money to work out. You want to rapid fire through some Royce trades?
Yeah,
I'll
just let's
throw
do it.
All these at you. You pick okay. Pick your favorite. And you can pick your favorite for Royce, and you can pick your favorite for the Nets as well.
Oh, okay.
All right. Let's do. Actually, one more crazy three teamer.
Oh yeah, no, this is great. This is what I want.
Thunder get Royce O'Neal, Lakers get Dorian Finney-Smith, Nets get D'Angelo Russell, Poku, 2 firsts and 2 seconds.
Oh wow, okay. I mean, I'm absolutely into that. You know, D'Lo's not going to be on the team long term. Poku, you take the upside shot of all upside shots on, but it's really about those 2 first-round picks. And if we can get 2 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks for DFS and Ron, let's go. I'm all about that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, D'Lo is like not the worst placeholder in the world, I think, for somebody else who's a little bit better offensively. Like he brings enough, I feel like, as a passer that it would like make this team somewhat passable. We didn't wade into the Cam Thomas conversation too much in terms of like his development and stuff like that. I am firmly of the opinion that like let him cook a bench unit, like that is the best way to develop him right now. And he can close games, but like I wouldn't worry too much about starting him. So I don't mind D'Lo coming in, you know, for a year or two. And then he's of that salary structure as well, probably a little bit less value, but like where you could move him in a deal for, you know, as a matching salary piece if needed. All right, so here's some more.
I love that trade, though, especially if we're getting one of those. I mean, the Thunder have so many picks, so who knows what pick that they would give us. But if one of those first-round picks comes from the Lakers, all day long.
Yeah, and I think it would have to because.
Yeah, to get DFS, absolutely.
To get Finney-Smith, who's the best player in that trade.
And we're taking D'Lo off their hands. They don't want him.
Right. All right, so Royce to the Thunder for Poku and Philly's 2025 first round pick. That one I just like the poetry of him getting brought in for that a Philly pick at the end of the round. We're gonna run out of time here.
Yep.
So that's one. Royce to the Pelicans for Kyra Lewis Jr. and Milwaukee's 2024 first. Royce to the I guess that and the Clippers one are really all that I had written down.
Man, you really got to believe in Kyra Lewis Jr. for that Thunder pick to work out, or not for the Pelicans pick to work out. because the Milwaukee 24, not going to be a great pick.
And the Nets lost.
Well, that was another exciting conclusion to a Brooklyn Nets basketball game. Guys, they fought hard. They fought real hard. Another moral victory for the Jock Vaughn Nets. Just, you know, warms my heart, Carl.
Both teams under 100 with overtime.
I don't even get me started on that. That's crazy. That is the most. You were talking about roster baiting earlier. We just got Spoelstra baited for sure. It was the most Heat game I've ever seen. But
I clearly wasn't paying attention. But that foul on Dennis Smith Jr. seemed like it was trash.
It did seem like it was trash. It seemed like he got all ball twice, Carl. Even though he got him with the body, he got all ball twice. I won't let anybody else tell me differently. But let's do what we intended to do with this podcast, and once again distract ourselves from another heartbreaking Nets loss. You had mentioned, so we just talked about the Pelicans trade Kyrie Lewis Jr. In the Milwaukee pick. The Milwaukee pick is looking like it's going to be pretty bad. So you really got to believe in Kyrie Lewis there.
I will say for all of these, like, I feel more confident in my ability to decide on players than like individual picks. Like if we feel like there needs to be a better pick there, like, you know, maybe there's something, but like, I also don't know. I mean, I just keep trying to keep in mind, like, you know, Royce O'Neal got a thrice protect, you know, was traded to the Nets for a like three times protected first. That was like the lesser of Brooklyn's or Philly's or Houston's maybe. I guess it was really just Brooklyn or Philly's. So like, I don't want to go out and act like he's got, you know, lottery pick net value on the open market necessarily. So to a certain extent, like, I would take that deal over, you know, nothing probably, unless you feel like there's a reason to retain him, like he's helping you recruit Donovan Mitchell, which, you know, maybe he is, but I don't know. And I love Royce O'Neal too. Like, don't get, like, if you want to keep him for the rest of the year, just to keep him, like, it's not going to take a lot for me to get behind that. Cause I like watching the dude play, but you know, I'm just trying to be realistic with what I think, you know, might be out there.
Well, and to your point about what we traded for Royce O'Neal, that's still getting more value than what we traded him for. So maybe the Nets do take that if there's nothing else there. And I do feel like they're likely in sell mode. Do they want to sell both DFS and Royce O'Neal? I don't know. But like, what's the value of giving yourself a couple percentage point chance more at making the play-in this year than it is getting real assets back for these guys? Because I, you know, I'm going to tell you, those their value will probably never be higher than it is this season, given the amount of playing time that they're getting.
I mean, I think if you could talk yourself into keeping Finney Smith just because his contract is so good. If you are going to bring a star in and you do feel like you have that lined up for Ben Simmons and not much else, then he's the type of guy that, like, sort of keeping alongside, you know, a player like that would make sense. And he's under contract for three. He's like one of the longest tenured, like him and Johnson and then like Clowney and Whitehead that are like the longest tenured or longest signed Nets. So like, from that perspective, like, yeah, I could see why, and that's also why the value on him is higher, whereas Royce O'Neal is like a 6 month or a whatever 3 month rental at this point. So you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't love Kyrie Lewis Jr. either. It just seemed like, you know, definitely somebody that's valueless to the Pelicans that like could potentially have value to the Nets. Even if he doesn't, like, I don't think it'd be the end of the world. If you get the pick, if all you get is the pick.
Well, I think you've seen a market where teams are starting to value getting players back over picks because folks are a lot more reluctant to give up picks after some of these trades that have happened, which I think continues to make the Kevin Durant trade look a lot better and continues to make the Rudy Gobert trade look completely absurd.
Yeah.
I do think that's probably a more realistic construction for a trade, having a younger player in there plus a first round pick that might not be incredible. And teams may only be willing to give up picks like that if they truly feel like it's going to bump them into contention, which is why I liked what you're doing with the Thunder, the Clippers, and the Lakers, because all three of those teams believe that they are clear contenders, whereas the Pelicans...
Yeah, I don't think they do.
No, they don't. And the funny thing is they can beat any team on any given night, but I also don't believe that they do.
Yeah, I think the value to the Pelicans would be... I do think they believe they could win a playoff series or two.
Yes.
And Royce O'Neal is kind of like the adult in the room, guy that's been through... you know, multiple rounds of playoffs, even if he, you know, hasn't made it all the way to the finals or something like that, you know, would make sense as a locker room guy to have and a stabilizing force and like, a,
yes.
you know, a two-way playoff rotation player, which, you know, don't grow on trees and allows you, if you're running a group of young guys out there to, you know, have a night where somebody can only bring it on one side of the floor. I mean, like, I always think of Royce O'Neal like as like, imagine if the Nets had had somebody like him on the bench in the Bucks series when Joe Harris like was struggling so mightily and like was already, you know, struggling on defense and like couldn't shoot. And there just wasn't like the only options really to bring in for him were Shamet or Bruce Brown. And, you know, Brown just wasn't spacing the floor in a way that, you know, made you think it was going to make sense, and Shamet like just wasn't going to defend in a way that made you think that it was going to make sense either. And being able to bring somebody like Royce O'Neal in and, you know, be that sort of like B plus both ways, like is pretty huge, I think, for a team like that, in a way that can help like bolster the confidence of the guys on the pod.
Yeah, it's just so nice to have somebody that you can confidently say will be in your seven man rotation in the playoffs, and you can plug him in. He's not going to be a liability at the end of games. DFS's ability to play a five in a small ball lineup too cannot be understated. And if you're talking about Royce O'Neal, if he's your fourth creator on the floor and he has to have the ball in a clutch situation, that's not the worst thing in the world. If he's got a horrible defender on him, or at least the fourth best defender, if you know you're the Nets and he's bringing the ball up for the floor, ball up the floor for you, yeah, that's a different situation. But they do have some secondary skills and ways that they fit in that great coaches and rosters would be able to unlock.
Yeah, and I think Royce is versatile enough too that, like, if the guy you need to sit is your power forward, like, great, slot him in there. If the guy you need to sit is your shooting guard, like, that's fine too. Like, you can make that work. So, I think that's his value even as a guy on an expiring.
Man, like, imagine the Clippers with DFS and they're playing a small ball lineup without Zubac and they're putting Dorian Finney-Smith at the five, and they're putting, let's say, Terrence Mann as the other guard that's out there. That would be such a fun lineup. Surrounding James Harden.
Yeah.
It's basically Harden plus defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Do you have any other? Oh, any other got one more for you.
Okay.
This is also a Thunder trade. This is for Dorian Finney-Smith. Dorian Finney-Smith for Davis Bertans, 2024 Houston pick, 2027 Clippers, first round pick, and 2 seconds, the 2025 Boston Memphis, and the 2026 Golden State.
Wow. I mean, yes. I mean, yes, I do love that. I don't care. Go ahead.
My theory being like maybe – I don't know. Some combination of those picks is to get off Bertans, and some combination of those picks is to take, you know, Finney-Smith.
Well, this is the point you were texting me the other day about the Thunder being able to give up those type of assets. And I think that they do this type of deal if there's a bidding war for DFS. Because they can afford to throw in this many picks without hurting their war chest or sacrificing the future. Whereas some of those other picks we were talking about, those could be the team's best asset or something they would need to make another trade that might swing their ability to contend. So I do like this, but I see it more of a bidding war type of trade where the Lakers are trying to swoop in, the Clippers are trying to swoop in, somebody else is trying to get them. They're like, hey, you know what? We can afford to throw in another first round pick. Screw it. If you take Bertans, we'll do it.
Yeah, I think the other benefit, again, like we said, like, you know, Finney-Smith makes so much sense going to a team with max stars because just like contract wise, he fits alongside them. But I think he also would fit really well with a team like the Thunder, where they know that they're going to have to pay guys over the next few years. His contract runs probably through that timeline that they're going to have to pay those guys. He scales alongside them as a player very nicely. And so like having him as like just like an extra piece of scaffolding as your team is growing at a number that's reasonable, when you're going to, you know, you're moving from guys on really nice cost control contracts into like guys that you're going to have to probably pay maybe a smidge over for if you're retaining your own free agents. So like that would be the other reason why like it could make sense for them if they wanted to be aggressive about it, which I don't know that they will, but I could see something like that making sense for that reason. And that's why like Royce wouldn't make sense in that scenario for that reason, because he's going to be due a new contract, although it could be a lower one anyway. But I feel like it'll be more year to year or a 2-year deal, whereas like Finney-Smith being, you know, on the books for 3 or 4 more years is pretty big.
Well, what's interesting is the adult in the room on the Thunder right now, it is Davis Bertans. So if you trade for an adult in the room that's actually going to play in games, that could be worth a bit more in terms of picks than I might be thinking. Like, imagine having that person that's been in playoff series, has played a number of different roles in playoff series, has gotten his butt kicked, has played well. He was on the team with the Mavs and they made that conference finals run. He's seen a lot of that, whereas Shai has seen the play-in, and then he was there. He was there that 1 year where they played when Chris Paul was on the team, right? I think they won that first round series.
I think so.
Trying to remember, but yeah, maybe that, but that was during the bubble. So just to get somebody with that much playoff experience that fits well into the team, that's not old enough that in 3 to 4 years he's going to be completely unplayable. He should still play well to 34, if I had to guess, before there's a major drop off.
I think so. I mean, his game should be the type of game that will work in that way.
Yeah, I like that. I also like the Thunder making a move too. I think they're a lot better than they thought they were going to be this season, because Chet Holmgren's a lot better than they thought he was going to be this season, not long term, and you got to capitalize on it. Injuries could strike at any time. Player could get unhappy and ask for a trade. You're going to have to pay some of these guys coming up. You can't make all the picks that you have. It just is DFS that guy that they want to bring in this season, or do they see another guy out there that it's worth paying that much for? I don't know who that player is.
And I don't think that this prevents you from bringing that other player in. You still have one of the young guys to trade, you know, like if that's Giddey or if that's the other Jalen Williams, you know, maybe that's what you do. Plus the war chest of picks. I don't think you're giving up your best picks in this scenario. You're giving up one like pretty good Rockets pick, but that Clippers pick is not, I don't think, gonna be looked at super valuably. So like totally. You know, I think to me, I think it's dealing from a position of wealth to acquire a guy that's going to help your team grow and your core grow, not detract you from being able to pay all of them and not prevent you from being able to make another big move down the road. I think frankly, it's like a lot smarter and a lot more forward thinking than making that. And oh, by the way, if you do need to trade for a star too, like, he can also become a salary ballast for it as well. Cause like, that's going to be the other thing that's going to happen to them, is like, they're going to have to pay all their guys. And if you've got like 4 or 5 core guys on, you know, major rookie extensions, you're not going to have a lot of room for these like in between pieces. So to have one that, you know, is going to be able to play, but can also be thrown into a trade if you need to yeah. package him and Giddey for, you know, somebody else that's on a max deal, like that's pretty valuable as well.
That's a good point. I didn't think about it that way, because the only other player they could package into that right now would be Bertans, but he's not an asset. He's somebody that they would have to give up more picks for versus somebody yeah. that would be viewed as the equivalent of 1 or 1.5 first round picks. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes me feel a lot better about the chances that they might take on somebody like that. This is just pontificating, but I do think that they should go for it this year. And I don't mean go for it by jettisoning all their assets for a star, but they should bring in somebody that is going to allow them to make a deep playoff run. But what are they, second in the West right now? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, you've obviously got like their second, but like, you know, you've got some sleeping sort of giants, but at the same time, like, you know, I think they're right there. And like, you know, as Nets fans, like, we could tell you, like, you might think you're opening a 5-year window and actually be opening a 1-year window. So,
and I'm going to throw this out there. They're second in the West. They've got the second best point differential in the entire league. Celtics have the best. No surprise there. 9.7. They come in at 9.1. There's no other team that's above 9.
And they're the only team that the Nets have beat in the past like 3 months. So,
which is wild. And the Nets were up, what, 20 in that game? And they still almost lost. I think they were up 20 with like 7 minutes left in the fourth.
Yeah. Yeah. And they still almost lost. But anyway, all right. So that's pretty much mine. I didn't really get into any Claxton deals.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I could have. I think what I was going to say about Clax is I haven't seen his name in a lot of trade rumors, and I think that means the Nets are likely planning to extend him, unless there's a real surprise trade that pops up.
And I think that goes along with what I was saying about the DeJounte Murray trade as well. Like, I feel like I feel like there's like these like really positive contracts, positive value contracts. And then there's a guy like Claxton where like, it'll kind of be what it is. Like, I don't think it'll be like, you're not stealing any money from anybody, you know, with what you're going to pay him. You know, I think he'll get around what Cam Johnson gets, probably maybe slightly lower. I don't necessarily know that he's like a defensive anchor in the way that, some of the other big time centers are. Like, I have concerns about his rebounding, but like, he's such a good switch defender. Like, I think he's a plus guy on both ends of the floor, at least right now. I think there's still room for growth offensively. Like, I know it feels a little bit like it's stagnated at least this year. But I feel like that's also just due to everything that we talked about at the beginning of this in terms of the Nets just not being able to create team basketball advantages right now. And I think he's shown enough in terms of like being able to go coast to coast and like, you know, I mean, is he more than like JaVale McGee offensively? Like, maybe not. Like, I think that's actually a pretty decent comp for him. Like career JaVale McGee, but like a little bit more athletic and, you know, realizing that earlier in his career. So like probably some room to grow there. So I guess all of that to say, I think you pay him. I don't think, you know, I think he's a guy you can include in a trade for somebody else as well. Like I think him and Cam Johnson are sort of in the same boat of two dudes that like you put him with something and picks and like, that'll be fine.
Well, I think those players could go to any type of team too. They wouldn't necessarily need to go to contenders because Claxton's still pretty young and Cam Johnson's one of those guys that could be a stabilizing force for a younger team, or he could be a great player for a contender that needs a little bit more versatility. So that's what I like about both of those two. I don't think it's like for a DFS or Royce O'Neal situation, I think those players have to go to contenders or at least teams that think they're contenders, whereas there's a lot more flexibility in terms of trading Clax and Cam Johnson.
Yeah, I just, for Clax, like, I just don't know what the market is. I don't think you don't get his bird rights by trading for him anyway. So, like,
that's a good point.
You have to think it puts the foot in the door, but I also feel like paying him is, like, not necessarily something, like, teams are going to be, like, lining up to try to do. So, I don't know. I just don't know. I'd sort of rather have the foot in the door to pay him and then deal with it in the future.
Do you think there's a market for, or sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Do you think there's a market for anybody else on the Nets? Like, for example, if a team needs scoring, would they give something up for Lonnie Walker, or would a team value Dennis Smith Jr.'s defense enough to try to bring him in? Or are those guys that you would only sign as a team if they were somehow bought out, which they won't be?
Is somebody giving something up for Lonnie Walker? Lonnie Walker's injury is a little tough.
I know, because he was playing so well before that.
He really was. I don't think it is a shock that like it's that coincided with the Nets doldrums starting.
Also same, because our doldrums are offensively. We held the team below 100 points in overtime.
Yeah, and like, I don't know. Like I feel like the Nets are the kind of team where like they got to be hitting threes and they really have to win the bench minutes in order to win games. Like, that's sort of been their MO all year. And even when they were sort of out hustling everybody, like I think a big part of it was like they were just running crazy margins in those bench minutes. And so, you know, it's paradoxical because it's like he's not really running with the starters, and how much does that matter? But like, it actually matters quite a bit for the Nets because they don't really have the ability to like lose their margin there. So, you know, anyway, but maybe I don't know what you'd get for him, and I don't know what you'd be willing to give up to, you know, for him. Like if you were really stripping it to the studs rebuild, then yeah, I think you'd get rid of, you'd trade him for 2 seconds or something, but there's no point
in stripping it to the studs, like we said. And I mean, I think that's why they'll hold out for, and not something incredible, because those two guys that we're talking about, Royce and Dorian, are role players, but they have the ability to hold out because they're not really giving up anything by not trading those guys.
Yeah, I mean, Royce would be the only one because, like,
because of his contract. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Dinwiddie is the one with the more interesting market to me, because I think he's probably slightly overpaid, but not that much. And he's like really, he needs like a really specific setup.
He's slightly overpaid, but his contract is great in comparison to what some of these other contracts are going to be. So I don't.
That's true. I mean, he's in his last year though, too. Like, so like, I guess what I'm saying.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah. I see what you're saying.
I don't necessarily know that there's like a huge desire to like get him in the door so you can retain him long term. Maybe there is, but I do feel like for a team, like that's why I really zeroed in on the Lakers for him, because I do feel like he's a player that could make sense there. Gabe Vincent's hurt, like they need that skill set. I think he makes more sense than D'Angelo Russell. You do have Reeves, but like I think Dinwiddie's probably a slightly better defender than Reeves. And at the very least, like now you've got like 2 6'5", 6'6" guys that you can run out there as like a point guard next to LeBron as well.
And he is somebody that you can trust in the clutch too. He's not afraid of the moment. The ball ends up in his hands.
Yeah.
He can drive, he can put up a shot.
He can move it as well. Like he plays well off ball. And I think like he's, you know, I joke about him being like combative with the referees and stuff, but like, I think he slots pretty well. Like he's pretty self-aware. Like he slots pretty well into like a hierarchy when there is somebody,
yeah,
that's there. So like I think like putting him next to LeBron, like I think that's easy for him to like he understands his you know place in the roster.
Yeah, LeBron and Luka are very similar too. We saw him fit in next to Luka.
Yeah, I think it's tougher for him on a team like the Nets, where like who's he supposed to defer to? And realistically, like you know his. You know, I know people hate him, but like, and I know he's been a little bit out of favor lineup wise the past like few weeks, but like,
which is so fascinating to me. I was going to bring that up too. I mean, like, do you think they're trying to make sure that he doesn't get injured so they can trade him? Because
I don't know. I think there's just like, I mean, to me, like the one constant that I've seen from the Nets this year is like they have prioritized Mikal Bridges' development pretty much at the expense of that is clearly the top priority. And that's had repercussions on how much Cam Thomas plays. That's had repercussions on how much Dinwiddie plays. That's had repercussions on like who's gets the ball down the stretch. Like I think they spam him a lot more than they probably should. Probably more than Bridges is frankly comfortable with.
It's hard to watch as a fan, but I get it. If you can improve that part of his game, that's huge.
And I do think it's improved. Like I think he's obviously fallen far. I mean, like I was talking about him having a Kawhi Leonard leap, like when we were doing our preview podcast over the summer. So like, obviously he's not been in that realm, but I think especially like when I like watch some of the film study stuff that like Lucas Kaplan puts together and like look at his improvements in terms of finishing his craft as a pick and roll ball handler, like that kind of stuff, I think has improved. And I think it's paradoxically, like I would say I'm lower on his ceiling and higher on his floor. And like, I think he's sort of closer to being a number two than maybe I would have thought, but that comes with the understanding that like, he's just not suited to like in any way be a number one.
That's super interesting because we are seeing him with the defense geared towards him or the best defender on him. Either he's getting double teamed or he's got the other team's best defender.
Well, and never ever having the opportunity to play against like a tilted floor at all.
Ever.
Like I think that to me, like that's the main thing is like I would want to put him somewhere where maybe it's about like drawing the focus of the other defender, but it's also just about like getting the defense in rotation and like letting him make some stuff happen, you know, in that circumstance. And I just feel like that's never the case for him right now.
Yeah, I think I'm just thinking about the last 2 minutes that I've watched him in a lot of these games, or the end of games that I've seen him in. He does seem to be getting to the line a lot more, and he does seem to be getting a lot closer to the cup before he takes that little fadeaway. And before, he was settling for longer jumpers, or he was giving up the rock, and there does seem to be more confidence there. And if you can get a mid-range shot that's not a long mid-range shot, or you can get to the line at the end of the game, I mean, that's all you need to do. And if that's going to be our secondary creator in the future, that's not too bad.
Yeah. I think you'd still want, you know, somebody else to be sort of instant offense, like on the roster as well. Like if you were to pair him with Donovan Mitchell, but like,
yeah, you need like a microwave or somebody else that could go get it for sure.
But I think like that being a viable offensive construction with, you know, Cam Johnson, who I think is stagnated a little bit as well this year, but like, you know, him as a floor spacer, Bridges like in a way where he can lock in on defense and you know bring some of the touch that he's brought, like I don't know, I think there's more there, and that clearly to me has been what the Nets have been, that's the basket that they're placing their eggs in.
You know what's tough is Cam was looking like he was going to live up to a lot of the things that we had hoped for him at the beginning of the season. He was making some of those extra passes, he was driving a bit more, and now he's really settled into that role as more of a spot up shooter and guy that can defend a couple of positions, which that is not a bad thing. That role is needed on so many NBA teams, but I think he's made it pretty clear that extra ceiling to be a bit of a creator, to be a bit of a driver, isn't really there and isn't going to be part of his game, which again, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting with this roster. Like, I could also just see it clicking with. You just add like one more guy, and then like all of a sudden, like everything falls into place. But
it's definitely not there right now. Well, and it's funny. I keep thinking like, oh, this team would be so much more enjoyable to watch with Tyler Hero, right? But
yeah,
like we talked about, that would just be a short term move because he doesn't make you a contender. He just makes the Nets more enjoyable to watch, short term. And what type of flexibility do you give up by giving up assets for him? So the season definitely would have been a lot more fun and a lot less frustrating, I think, even though he's been injured. But I don't really know what that does for the Nets long term.
Yeah. I mean, and my counterpoint this summer and would still be like, you could trade him for somebody else.
Yes.
But I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, you could always trade him.
Do you have any more roster betting that you'd like to do?
No, I wanted to talk about DeJounte Murray. So I'm really glad that we started with that because I was struggling to see a trade that made sense for the Nets, but you involving a third party in those made me wrap my mind around it a little bit more.
I think it has to, because I think you have to basically get, you have to turn one of Royce or DFS into picks that then goes into that trade so that you basically exit that pick neutral. Because I don't think it's like I don't think it's necessarily like there's a ton of opportunity cost to like taking the picks that you'd get for Dorian Finney-Smith and like applying them to DeJounte Murray, but like I do think that there's opportunity cost if you were to dip into that future stash for somebody that is not a superstar, which he's not.
Yeah, and that's the thing that made me feel the best about the trades that you were throwing out there. You were at best throwing a 25 pick in there, which I think is great, and that's a strong draft. So it's not like we're throwing them a 24 pick. If they're getting a 25 pick, that's a super strong draft. That's when the high school kids are going to be back in the draft for the first time, right? I think that's the reason that people were prioritizing that one.
Yeah, maybe.
So that there'll be a much larger pool of draftees to choose from. That's number one. And two, there's a lot more talent. Like Cooper Flagg should be in that draft.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a double draft, isn't it?
Double draft. Yeah, I think that's it though. We touched upon our feelings on the current Nets, and even though it's just not fun to watch them right now, it's the position that they should be in, because to be in any other position would either mean that a superstar was available. That was very unlikely. for the season, or they were to make some minor moves to upgrade around the edges to make the team more aesthetically pleasing, which again, your counterpoint is, yeah, you probably could have traded those pieces, but
eh. Yeah, I do think like people need to chill the fuck out.
Yes. Like, oh my God. You know, like, this is just an inconsequential season. Nothing was ever going to happen this season.
Well, and I think to your point, like if they were going to be mediocre, you know, if you're going to be mediocre, like, there's going to be these ebbs and flows, and like the fact that you've lost, you know, whatever, 8 of their last 10, it doesn't get worse with each loss. Like at some point, like it is what it is. Like you can have, you know, you can question Jacques Vaughn if you want to, I think that's fine. But like people act like this team is like losing direction with each loss, when like the direction was a gap year in the first place.
The direction is mediocrity. Guess what? We're smack dab in the middle of mediocrity.
You could hope that it would have been better, and I did, you know, certainly. But I don't think that this is like, I think this is well within a reasonable percentile outcome. Like this is in the 40s, probably. You know, totally. Not great, but like like the vaccine season. You know, like it's.
Which was,
we're not like that far off.
1%, the 1% of outcomes, but the lower 1%. But no, not only are we not that far off, this is a nadir, so to speak. We're going to have a stretch where we look better than we are too.
Yeah. That's going to happen. Or they're going to trade guys and they won't. But
right, exactly.
But that's fine too.
Which is great. Yeah. Take a flyer on a couple of young guys. Maybe we get some good picks. That'll be fun too.
And like I said, like I would rather do this. Force the hand into like recouping the assets here and then, you know, like live to fight another day than that. I just feel like people are really uncomfortable with like, it's just like a lot of all or nothing bias. Like either we're tanking and being terrible and like immediately like amassing a million draft picks, or we're like, you know, trying to win a championship. And like, unfortunately, that's just not, that just doesn't make sense as a strategy. I feel like from where they started from, like walking out of the Durant trade. So,
and not people are going to get off a contender. That's just not the way that it works.
No. And I don't think they're ever trying to be this year. I think they've been pretty clear about that.
No, they just don't have a player that's going to make them a contender, and they don't really have the opportunity to trade for one right now. That's a good point though, because the worst thing to happen this season would have been to have an artificially inflated record by some great 3-point shooting now that could potentially trick ownership into being buyers or standing pat with some resources that we could get some good assets for. So I would say, if you want to look at any positive from this season, that's the positive.
Yeah.
The fact that we might be sellers now, which would be great.
Yeah. I think that's good.
Yeah.
Well, Brett,
good thing to wrap on.
This up.
Yeah.
Also, the Nets lost. That's how we wrapped the first half of this call. So,
The Nets lost.
And the Nets are lost.
That's it. Yeah, they are. Well, Nets fans are lost. I think Nets ownership knows exactly what they're doing.
That's true.
You'd see a lot more leaks from the side camp if things weren't going in the right direction.
I do think they like don't want to bottom out, though. Which
I think so, too.
I think it's fine, but, you know, it's worth noting. I also think there's like a tendency, particularly since Harden's gone, to just sort of be like, yeah, we're done with that Harden trade. But it's like, no, you still had to make the payments for like another 4 years.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So. You took out a loan. There's some interest there.
Yeah. Anyway.
Those are IOUs. Well, that's just as good as regular money.
265,000. You're going to want to, that's what we call a keeper.
All right. On that note, let's wrap it up.
I don't know what we usually say at the end of these: Stitcher, Breaker, SoundCloud, Fetcher, Flacker, Grinder, whatever.
RSS feeds, Reddit, 4chan, Tumblr.
Dig. MySpace, Friendster.
Newgrounds.com.
GeoCities.
GeoCities.
Usenet. Angel Fire.
You're the man now, dog.
CJB.net. Mr. Savage. CJB.net.
Zombo.com. Tough girl.
Lemon Party.
You can find us at goatsy.fart.
clownpenis.farm.
Clownpenis.farm.
Ryan.top.gunner.
You never hurt me. Hello, Brooklyn. If we had a daughter, guess what I'ma call her? Brooklyn Carter. When I left you for Virginia, it didn't offend you, cause you know I only stepped out to get dinner. Hello, Brooklyn.
How you doing? Where you going? Can I come soon? I can't. I'm with your buddy.
That's our back.
Oh, the Ness, are you kidding? They suck. But they're due.
They certainly do.